Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you all and welcome to this edition of Africa Link this Monday, the 4th of January, 2016. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host in Bonn, Germany. Our main stories today. Nigerians ponder what's in store for them this year as the Boko Haram insurgency shows no sign of ending.
Security is still a big challenge and it should be the priority for 2016.
The U.S. says it is deeply disappointed by Rwanda's President Paul Kagame's decision to run in 2017. We hear from an analyst.
I don't think that the US's comments will have much of an effect on its relations with Rwanda. This isn't the first time that the US has expressed its discontent with certain events inside Rwanda.
Plus, another segment of Crime Fighters, a learning by ear production.
Top story.
We begin in Nigeria, where Boko Haram remains number one security threat for another year running. Though President Muhammadu Buhari declared the insurgents had been technically defeated, many Nigerians are still concerned about suicide bombings and lone wolf attacks. They now want their president to take the security issue as number one priority for the year 2016. In Lagos, Sam Olukoya has more on the story.
Nigerians generally agree with President Muhammadu Buhari that the Nigerian military has reduced Boko Haram's ability to attack and hold positions. Boko Haram has apparently lost the vast expanse of territories it controlled in the past. But many ordinary Nigerians like Mayowa Adebola believe that in spite of its setbacks, Boko Haram will still pose a major security threat in 2016.
To a very large extent, Buhari has successfully degraded their abilities to attack the people. But security is still a big challenge and it should be the priority for 2016.
The big security threat from Boko Haram in 2016 lies in the group's ability to carry out suicide bombings. President Buhari admitted as much that the group is still capable of suicide bombings, which it carried out with devastating effects in 2015. With no one sure where the next bomb attack will occur, many ordinary Nigerians like Joseph Blabo believe the fear of the unknown is something to worry about in 2016.
Insecurity has been our problem for so many years, so I don't know what this year might bring to us in terms of Boko Haram insecurity. I must say I don't really know what fate we have because they are just by the corner. In fact, I'm not even seeing the green light that security issues in Nigeria this year will have a solution.
Abiodun Aremu, a civil society activist campaigning for the economic rights of Nigerians, says security challenges posed by Boko Haram will not end overnight. He says economic factors that made the group appealing for the poor should be addressed.
When you look at the Boko Haram futures in Nigeria, it's an economic war, not a military war. It's not just about physical security. You are talking of the social security itself. You're having mass unemployment. When you run an economy that makes majority of the populations idle and not productive, you are bound to have crisis. So we need now to fight for an economy that must ensure that the society is constructed in such a way that must satisfy the people.
But with projections that Nigeria will face serious economic crisis in 2016 as a result of the fall in oil prices, a commodity that accounts for more than 90% of the country's export earnings, the economic climate might still make it possible for Boko Haram to thrive very well in the new year.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. It's not just Nigeria where Boko Haram militants have wreaked havoc. Neighboring Cameroon is also engaged in a war to rout out the Islamists. As Mokinzeka reports in Yaounde, Cameroon's dream of becoming an emerging economy by 2035 is at risk due to insecurity.
Many Cameroonians, like Yaounde-based business lady Frankita Akam, say their desire is for peace to return to their country 3 years after the Boko Haram insurgency extended to the Central African nation.
My desire is for peace to return to Cameroon, because without peace nothing can be achieved. So if the government can do more in fighting Boko Haram, I will be very happy. Remember, you can be happy even if you are living in poverty, but said in riches in a situation where there is war or conflict.
Cameroon, Chad and Nigeria have together lost thousands of people as a result of the Boko Haram insurgency. Paul Biya's government also spends a huge chunk of its budget, about $40 million in the war annually. Besides the insurgency, Cameroonians say they are concerned about the widespread corruption in the country. In a new report published in December 2015, Transparency International found that Cameroon, alongside South Africa, Ghana, Liberia, and Nigeria, were among the most corrupt sub-Saharan African states. Nancy Elvis, youth leader of Cameroon opposition political party, the NUDP, says Cameroon should work harder in 2016 to clean its image.
Well, we expect the government to be able to fight corruption, because so many years Cameroon is still being ranked among the most corrupt countries in Africa. This is not good for a country that is hoping to be emergent. We know that corruption nourishes poverty, corruption slows down economic growth. We need that reforms should be put in place to actually fight this corruption plague. And we also think that, you know, economic reforms should be those that can reach down to the people on the street.
In his New Year's message, Cameroon's President Paul Biya admitted that his country was suffering from underdevelopment and that most of the country's plans were hindered by insecurity and terrorism. He, however, pledged to transform Cameroon to an emerging economy by 2035.
Andre says,
in 2016, the most important thing for our country will be to facilitate industrialization. There is no way we can be an emerging economy without industrialization. I know that we have enormous agricultural, mining, tourism, cultural, and urban resources. They constitute, for our country, the essential capital needed to take off.
That report was compiled by Moki Kinseka.
Africa Link. Every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Deeply disappointed is how the United States feels of Rwanda's President Paul Kagame after he announced on New Year's Day that he will seek re-election in 2017. This was made possible after Rwanda changed its constitution in a referendum last year. The change means Kagame could stay in office until 2034. My colleague Crispin Wakideo spoke to Phil Clark, a political scientist on the Great Lakes region at SOAS, University of London, to find out what this means for US-Rwanda relations.
I don't think that the US's comments will have much of an effect on its relations with Rwanda. This isn't the first time that the US has expressed its discontent with certain events inside Rwanda. I think, if anything, this may entrench Kagame's position on the third term. The Rwandan government has a very long history of feeling that it's us against the world. It's a government that has often felt abandoned by the international community. And I think Rwanda knows that the donors need Rwanda as much as Rwanda needs the donors. Rwanda, I think, also feels that there's a certain degree of hypocrisy in the comments being made by the US and certain European donors, given that only the US and France have presidential term limits.
You mentioned there that Rwanda feels sort of like abandoned by the international community. Why do they feel like that?
Rwanda feels abandoned by the international community mainly because of the international reaction during the genocide and the failure of the UN and other international powers to protect civilians and to stop the fighting. And the ruling party in Rwanda, the Rwandan Patriotic Front, likes to frame the events of 1994 as the moment in which it, as a rebel force, had to end the genocide because the UN couldn't do that. And ever since then, that has entrenched a very strong view in Rwanda that the international community can't be trusted in very difficult political moments.
The US had very strong words, and they warned that efforts by African leaders to change constitutional term limits are weakening democratic institutions. Is that the case in Rwanda?
The situation in Rwanda is a little more complicated than that the US and others have suggested. On On the one hand, I think we have to recognize that there are a whole range of reasons why many Rwandans, in fact, support the idea of President Kagame running for a third term. And that includes both Hutu and Tutsi. Something that I've seen in my research is many Hutu peasants saying, we don't like Kagame very much, but it's better to have him than to have an unknown alternative. And there's a recognition that Kagame has brought socioeconomic advances to the country. He's brought justice for genocide crimes and emptied the prisons of many genocide suspects. And he's achieved a form of stability in rural areas that many people would have thought was unimaginable in 1994.
Phil Clark of SOAS speaking to my colleague Crispin Mwakidewu. Let's take a break from politics and talk about the economy in Zimbabwe. The Southern African nation suffered from hyperinflation until it abandoned its currency in 2009. But as Columbus Mavunga reports, Zimbabwe's economic outlook for 2016 does not look promising.
Since 2009, Zimbabweans are using multiple currencies such as the euro, the South African rand, and soon the Chinese yuan. But chief currency being the US dollar. Gift Mugano, a senior economics lecturer at the University of Zimbabwe, says that is the main reason why prices in Zimbabwe have been falling, because the rand, the currency of Zimbabwe's main trading partner, South Africa, has been weakening.
When there's deflation, you see it from the government, they also have a budget deficit. Companies will be reporting losses as well. So that's not good for an economy. You need single-digit inflation, which could be 5%, 6%.
Zimbabwe's annual inflation rate is at negative 3.6%. It has been going down since 2009, which has led to a decline in the country's national income. As a result, Zimbabwe has not been able to pay salaries for civil servants for December 2015. John Robertson, an independent economist based in Harare, says the starting point for President Robert Mugabe's government is to reduce expenditure.
Government, I'm afraid, is out of step with nearly everybody. Government has increased its size. Government has tried to sustain high incomes, and government's incomes are only payable out of tax revenues, and the tax revenues are going down. The economy in this country has been cut by about half since land reform started.
What can the government do to address this deflation?
Well, job creation is the most important, but before you get job creation, you have to have investment. And the investment inflows, therefore, should be the government's main priority. And they should get rid of all the barriers that they and government have put up to stop inflows and investment funding.
Such as?
Oh, the indigenization legislation.
Zimbabwe introduced indigenization laws in 2007, which stipulate that foreign businesses must cede 51% control to black Zimbabweans. Mugabe says the law is meant to bring in blacks into the economy who had been marginalized during the colonial era. But analysts say that has scared away investors. Since then, foreign investment has been declining, so is the economy, and now deflation, as Zimbabweans cannot afford to buy goods. Estimates put unemployment rate in Zimbabwe around 85%.
Columbus Mavunga reporting from Harare. Crime Fighters, our learning by ear investigative radio drama, is up next. Enjoy the action.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hey there, welcome to the second part of Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers. In the little African town of Bovu, unemployed veterinarian Patrick has just been murdered. His wife, Lucy, is the main suspect, and Detective Allen has arrested her. But evidence at the crime scene suggests that other unknown persons may have been involved. Let's join Allen in today's episode, I Didn't Do It. He's just arriving at the office he shares with Carl, a detective who works with the anti-poaching department.
Hey, good morning, Alan.
Hi, Carl.
I've heard you're caught up in some messy homicide. A friend of yours, I believe.
Don't even mention it. I've known them both since high school.
Them?
Yes, the victim, Patrick, and his wife, Lucy. Years ago, I even had a brief romance with Patrick's sister, Mona.
Okay, that's interesting.
It gets worse. Lucy, the victim's wife, is our prime suspect.
Wow. That's really messy, Alan. And you're still going to investigate? Even though you know them personally?
Yeah, but enough about me. What are you up to in the anti-poaching department?
We're hunting that notorious poacher, Mr. G. You must have heard about him.
Ah, yeah. The infamous Mr. G. Everybody's heard of him, but nobody seems to know his identity.
That's the one. We got an anonymous tip that he was hunting in Bovu Jungle. But when we got there, all we found was some dead elephants. They had just been killed, and their tusks had been sewn off.
See, Carl, there is way more action in your department. You get to drive off into the jungle while I get fat sitting at my desk talking to suspects the whole day.
Well, I'd better get back to work. I have an appointment this afternoon with Dr. Susan Galana, the wildlife conservationist. Let's see whether she has any tips that'll help me crack down the poachers. See you later.
See you. I'm off to interrogate my main suspect, Lucy.
Good luck with that.
Is Alan really going to get any new information from Lucy? Remember, Lucy's neighbor has accused her of killing Patrick.
Hello, Lucy. Are you right? Off the record, because you and I have known each other a long time, tell me what you know about Patrick's murder so that I can help you.
I didn't do it, Alan. I didn't do it. You have to believe me.
Okay, calm down, Lucy. Just calm down and tell me what happened.
I just came home and there he was, lying in a pool of blood. My husband dead.
Okay. Hey, shh. Just start from the beginning. Tell me, what time did you come home? Lucy, come on.
I came home after work.
Can anyone confirm this? Did you meet someone on your way from work to home?
Yes. No, I don't know, Alan.
This is important, Lucy. Please, try to remember, then tell me.
The only thing I can think about right now is that my husband's been taken from me.
And why did you try to run when we found you at the crime scene? Lucy, you have to talk to me. I want to help you. You know that Patrick was my friend.
I ran because I don't know. I just didn't want to see it. I was confused. I didn't know what to do.
We have a witness who says you and Patrick were fighting and you threatened to kill him.
Yeah, we had a fight. Every couple fights now and then. And yes, I did say I wanted to kill him, but I didn't mean it. I wanted to spend the rest of my life with Patrick.
Lucy, there are several things that point to you. We found your fingerprints on the knife that killed Patrick.
I didn't do it. I did not kill my husband, Alan.
Do you have any idea who else could have murdered him? Did he have any enemies?
Enemies? No. Everybody liked Patrick.
Okay, Lucy. We'll talk some more later. Try to calm down now and get some rest.
And as the wheels of justice grind away, people in the formerly sleepy town of Bovu are getting on with life as if nothing had happened. Dr. Susan Galana is an environmental activist who runs a non-governmental organization to protect wildlife. Alan's colleague, Carl, from the anti-poaching department, has come to meet her in her office.
Thank you for seeing me, Dr. Susan.
Not at all, officer. We applaud you and your department and all the efforts you're making to wipe out poaching.
Thanks. Well, as you might know, one of our biggest headaches is a poacher who goes by the name Mr. G.
Uh-huh.
He's been a thorn in our side for a long time.
Yeah, I've heard of this elusive Mr. G. Nobody seems to know who he really is. If there's anything my organization can do to help you catch him, we'd be more than willing.
I'm glad you say that, Dr. Susan. Unfortunately, we're not well equipped to tackle poaching in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even have cars to go deep into the jungles of Bovu.
Oh, no. That really is a problem. And poachers are very sophisticated operators nowadays.
We're planning a raid in Bovu jungle.
A raid?
Yes. To try and capture Mr. G and his helpers. We were wondering whether you'd be able to lend us your organization's helicopter for aerial surveillance.
Look, Officer Carl, is it?
Yes.
We can talk about it. It depends when you would need it.
All right.
And of course, I'll have to talk to the board before making a decision like that. I'll let you know what they say. But in the meantime, if there's any other way I can help you, please let me know.
Thank you. I will. Goodbye, Dr. Susan.
Goodbye, Officer.
But while Carl and Dr. Susan are planning how to stop them, the poachers themselves are already deep in the jungle, on the lookout for elephants.
There, there. Do you see them?
They are huge.
Oh, mother of God. Look at that bull.
Shh, you'll spook them.
Great. See what you've done.
What? What have I done?
You spooked them, you idiot.
I didn't do anything.
I didn't do anything.
You didn't do anything? How many times have I told you not to speak loudly when we are hunting? Elephants are very sensitive animals. They can hear things from miles away. You might as well just ring a bell next time so they know we are coming.
I am sorry.
Yeah, well, tell that to our boss, Mr. G. What do you think he will do to us when he hears we lost the big tusker again?
Look, I am sorry, okay? It's not like I've done any poaching before. I just started.
Yeah, and by the looks of things, you won't last very long.
I am sorry.
We'll have to follow those elephants' tracks and radio Mr. G when you find them. He wants to kill that bull himself.
So now we have two mysteries to unravel. Who killed Patrick? Was it Lucy or someone else? And who is Mr. G? Join us next time in On the Trail of the Poachers for more clues. In the meantime, you can visit our website dw.com/crimefighters or like us on Facebook. Bye-bye.
Now, a quick summary of what we've covered in this edition of Africa Link. Nigerians say Boko Haram remains the number one threat in their country. The U.S. has criticized Rwanda's President Paul Kagame for his intention to seek re-election in 2017. And Zimbabweans face harsh economic times as the country grapples with rising food prices. Do write to us with your comments on the stories we've aired. Send us a text message to +49 160 957 59510. An email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe in Bonn.